If something's not very good, you don't have to settle for that. You are allowed and you should have good things and a good life and a good relationship, a good job, whatever it is that you want.
Welcome to the Viscosity Podcast, brought to you by VLM, training and coaching specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by founder Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed about where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? This podcast is here to help you become unstuck from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real-life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We'll be sharing real-life stories from real people doing incredible things. Stay tuned for our next guest. Welcome to episode 8 of the Viscosity Podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have Jonathan Bean in the podcast and studio, who is a freelance writer and charity fundraiser and soon-to-be published author. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
It's great for you to be here. Thank you. It's great to have you on the show. Who knew that after we met, a chance meeting in the Isle of Wight, that we'd be co-authoring a book together? And we finished it now.
Yeah, 30-odd thousand words done, start to finish, sort of a four-month process.
It has.
Like not a lot of time to write a book in.
It's been great working with you, but more about the book later. Jonathan, can you tell our listeners about what you've been doing in your career and your entrepreneurial journey and what you're doing now?
It's sort of an interesting one in a way, because I don't necessarily think of myself as an entrepreneur. That might be because I find it quite a difficult word to say, but actually you helped in that regard. I've worked in the charity sector for a decade now, doing fundraising. And for those that maybe aren't that familiar with it, there's a lot of funding out there in the form of grants from large charitable trusts and foundations, as well as the big institutional funders that other people will be familiar with. So the lotteries, Children in Need, Sport England, that kind of thing. It's quite a big sort of writing element to that. That's something I've always been quite comfortable with. And in tandem with that, in parallel, sometimes crossing over, I've built up a kind of a career as a freelance writer as well, originally with sort of personal projects and then being paid for them and doing some work for businesses and an online running club. And then a couple of years ago, I was made redundant, which was quite an amicable process. This sort of that kind of course had come to an end, really. I found it a fairly straightforward transition to working rather than just for one person on a full-time basis, sort of, yeah, building up a bit of a portfolio of work. So that's fundraising for charities, charitable trusts mostly, and as well the writing side of things. I've been doing quite a lot of work with small organisations who don't necessarily have the resources to employ someone on a full-time basis, and nor should they if that's not the most efficient use of their funds. But it's often well-meaning people who have a cause close to their hearts and they want to help, but not career fundraisers. They don't have the sort of the 10 years or in how to raise six figures for their thing, whatever it may be. For example, they could either pay me to do it for them, or they could pay me to help them do it themselves. And I think the upskilling within the sector is an important thing to do. It's better value for money for donors, and I think it makes more sustainable organizations if everyone within the charity can do what they need to do. I have a sort of a stronger idea about what the weak points are in the sector, what the strong points are, and just trying to shift what I do to emphasise those strong points and address the weak points.
Yeah, it must be a fairly rewarding career in terms of helping many charities, which you have done across the UK, to get funding and be successful during that process. And I guess you're very passionate about philanthropy and helping others. And it's been a real pleasure writing the book with you as well and playing to both of our strengths.
Yeah.
And again, more of that later. But what does the future hold for you in terms of what you're going to do next? With you mentioned about looking at coaching and strategy, what's next
in the short term? It's more the same. I've got some commitments that are still running. The really big exciting new thing for me, as it is for you, is the book. And I'm looking forward to seeing where that takes us. To have it as a physical object in our hands when that time comes, and to see what kind of opportunities come out of that. I'm quite open-minded about the future. I'm not really someone who has this set 5-year plan on I want to achieve this very specific thing. There's a direction I'd like to move in and waypoints along the way. And this is something that we talk about in the book. Those sort of waypoints are more sort of intrinsic things I'd like to achieve in reference to values, rather than think, okay, I want to earn X by date Y, for example. I'm open-minded about the future.
So let's talk a bit about the book, because I know I've been thinking about this for about 3 years now in terms of the content. And I know a lot of the thoughts and things that I talk about in the book from my perspective is around my experience within the coaching world and helping business owners mainly, and also within my teaching practice, helping people look at where their particular pain points are and then looking at how they can achieve the best for them and what success looks like for them and helping them and navigating through that process. So I know I came up with a blueprint of how potentially to do that. And then we met. You do a lot of writing. You're an amazing writer. And then we started talking, and then one thing led to another. And here now we have this book, which is born. It's it's come to fruition. So from your side, I know, and one of the things that attracted me to working with you is that you have a phenomenal mindset in terms of your motivation. And I know we have a shared passion for running, and you have just completed the London Marathon.
Yeah, that right? In October.
And it's a huge achievement. So tell me from your perspective about the book in terms of what you've really enjoyed writing about as that process has evolved.
The more I wrote, the more I got into it. And as you said, the blueprint is something that you've been gestating us for a while, and then I helped flesh it out, add words around the edges and tie things together. Before we had the conversation, it wasn't something that I realised I wanted to write, and it wasn't necessarily something that I realised I had anything that I could write about myself. In the process of reading what you'd written and what you'd come up with and then sort of adding to that and working around it, I don't want to say like, I'm marvellous, I'm the finished article, but I realised a lot of what we were talking about is things that I've maybe been through myself.
Sure.
Not writing from this point of I'm at the destination, this is how you get here.
Yeah.
But rather I'm a step or two along the road here, and this is how I found my way, and this is how you might find your way too. It's been eye-opening for myself in terms of understanding myself better, and it's been surprisingly rewarding to do as a self-reflection exercise. But also with going back to what are my values, which is using what I know and what I do to ultimately add something beneficial. And if this helps someone, then that's great. And the more I got into it, the more I got into that mission. I'm not going to say it was ever like just a writing gig or this would be a cool thing to do, which it was, and it has been a cool thing to do, but it became more personal to me the more I did it.
I guess for me, writing the book, I wanted to be able to, for someone to pick the book up off a shelf and go, thank you, because of reading that chapter that changed XYZ, and then it led to that person living their best life and doing things and putting themselves in the driving seat and taking things forward for them. As you said before, gestating this book was there, and it was, I felt almost if I didn't do it, and it was almost that I was going to do the world a disservice by not being able to share the thoughts and share these things. And then when we met, it was just so timely. Timing is everything. And we met, and then that was the motivation for us both to go, let's do this. And then boom, within 4 months, It's probably taken a bit longer than that if we're being realistic about it, hasn't it? But then it's gone from there to being, and reading, we've still got a little bit of work to do on it. I sat the other day and just reading it again and looking at things that I thought, okay, asking myself, so what? Is there anything else that needs to change and put in there? And I sat back and thought, what an amazing thing for us to work together to produce this piece of work that is hopefully going to inspire many people across the world. And I'm sure this is probably not our first book. There might be more in the future.
There's little sparks of ideas popping away.
So what would you say for you in your life? What's been your biggest achievement? I'm sure there's been many.
I was pondering this on the train up here, and on a superficial level, a thing that quite lots of friends and family, I suppose, would associate maybe with it is running. I'm not pro, I'm not elite level, but I'm all right. And I've run more than a dozen marathons, and I've gone under 3 hours 3 times, which for me is a big deal. But are they the biggest achievements in my life? Probably not. They represent something. But I think if I'd gotten really into, I know you're a fan of chess, if I'd gotten really into chess, then that setting and achieving of targets or personal bests or of finding a joy in a thing, that's the achievement. The crossing the finish line and the time on the clock is a benchmark, but it's not really the mark of the achievement. The achievement is the decision to think, this is a thing I love doing,
yeah,
and I want to do it to the best of my ability,
yeah,
and to find what that is. And I'm still motivated to try and do that. Beyond things like that, actually, I think the biggest achievement in my life to date, and I think it's going to continue, and this is going to sound so cheesy, but it is my relationship with Heather.
Aww.
My wife, Heather Dobson. We got together, it was a university summer holiday, summer job,
yeah,
little fling thing. And yeah, then that was 2005, and it's just evolved from essentially two kids having fun to,
yeah,
a one bed flat, and it's a house and developing careers and overcoming things. Our relationship has been sort of solid all that time, but there's been challenges for each other along the way and how we've supported, yeah, each other. And yeah, I think that in terms of, if you were to say, what's the body of work that I'm most proud of, I think it's that. And I know that's a funny way to refer to a relationship, but it's, you know, this accumulated experience, it's this evolving thing. It's not what it is when you're 20 or 21.
No.
And where we're at 37, 38 is not where we're going to be when we're 87, 88. Like Heather's grandparents, who are in their 90s, and they're the cutest, closest couple ever. I think, like, that is relationship goals,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
there. And yeah, so I suppose that's the kind of the biggest achievement, really. Yeah, in a sense.
That's brilliant. And I know that you guys are so strong together. It's lovely to hear that your biggest achievement is working through your being partners together, because often I think there's a lot of emphasis on careers, but actually being happy and having an amazing relationship, yeah, with someone is, it's a wonderful thing. And that takes a lot of work. You've got to work hard at a relationship, and there will be ups and downs, as you say. And it's a wonderful thing, actually. And I think if anyone's listening to this, any biggest tip, what would you say is to having a successful partnership?
I'll start that by saying I don't necessarily hold to the view that the length of a relationship is the only marker of what makes it successful.
Yeah.
You could have a very short relationship that is successful, or you could have a really good relationship that then, for whatever reason, you evolve as people and it's no longer the right thing to do. In that case, I think the achievement is having the communication and the understanding to call it a day or change it or move on in a way that is healthy, I hope. And I really do believe that our relationship is a kind of it's that sort of soulmate, like those albatrosses that are together forever. But also I recognise it's not right for everybody. And I think the communication is the key part of that. And yeah, we have always been very open with each other. What helped was when we first moved to Southampton together, we didn't really know anyone else, and we were in a small flat, and you get very good at reading someone's body language when, yeah, you're spending all your time together. And you can tell if the other one is a little bit down or excited about, yeah, something or whatever the case may be. So there's no hiding. We are honest about things and we are open about things, and we're not perfect, but we recognise the importance of that, so we prioritise it.
Yeah.
A slightly non-serious answer, I'd also suggest to anyone, I think what's worked for us in a practical sense is joint bank accounts, because then there's no like hiding that kind of thing. And also get a cleaner if you can afford it. Like, we both work really hard, and
yeah,
you know, Saturday morning, cleaning the house top to bottom. Yeah. There's no way to
spend
start a
time
weekend.
With each,
yeah,
other.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to spend the morning in bed and listen to the radio and have, yeah, nice coffee and pop out and get some pastries.
Exactly.
And if that, I appreciate that's a luxury, and I appreciate that's not something everyone can do. But for us, and it might be that you have your own equivalent of getting the cleaner that works for you. Like maybe it's a takeaway a couple of times a week or something to take the pressure off the daily grind, the work of living, to create more space and more time for fun. That's what the cleaner is.
Yeah.
The cleaner's not about having a tidy house. It's about having the time together.
Yeah, and outsourcing. I talk on the podcast in the past about outsourcing, which is really important. And look, I can resonate with you. I think the one thing I would say about love and all those things is that I think you've got it starts from within, as I talk about in the book as well. I allude to some of the journey I've been on. And I would say that for me, meeting my partner, Will, I spent a lot of time working on me before I met Will, and but we'd been friends for years. And it wasn't until I reconnected back with him when I moved back to the UK that kind of evolved. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
And yeah, very excited for the future. And yeah, we're off to Australia very yes. soon. So very excited about that. Anyway, I've got some more questions for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know. I could
a segment of love. We yeah. could do a little love podcast here.
Yeah. About that'll be book two.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, have you heard of the love languages? The five
no,
love languages?
No,
okay, so you've got to get into this. And I found out about it when I was in Australia. So there's five different love languages. And one of them is, for example, acts of service. So
okay.
you might go out and get pastries and do nice things for yeah. Heather. And one might be the other ones. So like gifts, giving gifts, mm-hmm. physical touch. There's five of them. So there's various things, but if you have similar love languages, which love language your partner has, it can really help foster a really great relationship. So have a look into that as well.
Yeah.
There's some tips there. Yeah. Maybe the not that you need them, but yeah.
Well, you never know. You never know what's around the corner. You don't know what you're going to have to deal with next.
Exactly. So what would you say has been the toughest thing about working for yourself? Because let's face it, you've been doing a lot of freelance writing, a lot of freelance charity writing as well. What would you say has been the toughest thing working for yourself?
The difficult thing for me initially was the boundary setting, which I don't think is uncommon. And those boundaries are different for other people. Personally, I can be distracted quite easily. So I had to set myself quite strict boundaries as to this is work time, so you work, and this is not work time, so you don't work. And understanding that in terms of my own sort of personal boundaries with myself, but also other people. So it's silly little things. It's don't email people in antisocial hours if you don't want to get emails at antisocial hours yourself, that kind of thing. You've been busy, which I'm thankful for. Some of that has maybe been from saying yes to one or two too many things, but I enjoy the work, so I don't mind temporarily flexing up that time and doing a little bit more work than would maybe be ideal if I'm getting paid, but also if I'm learning something from it, meeting new people, doing something exciting. But also I don't want to get in the trap of doing 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to keep things more sociable.
Yeah.
So also knowing when to say no. I recently had to say to a prospective client, I'm sorry, I just don't have time for this. It's not just fair on me to do that. It's also fair on them because they want someone who's going to do a good job and not be distracted and going to be able to give them the time that they need. Except that you do have a finite capacity, and as much as you need the work as a freelancer, and there's always that fear of what if it all dries up, you can't do everything all the time. The key to longevity is to pace yourself.
Do you think you would ever go back into full-time employment?
I would do. I'm not opposed to the idea of employment. I joked to someone recently, it's not like this sort of philosophical sort of hatred of PAYE and having someone else sort out my national insurance and pension and things like that. It's not like I really love doing my own tax return. I would be very reluctant to work for someone 5 days a week again. And I think that's because I've learned I appreciate the variety. I like having different things to work on. And I know that fundraising is such that it can be fairly repetitive or have a rhythm to it. And if I was doing that 5 days a week on a rolling, continual basis, I think I'd find that quite difficult to motivate myself.
Yeah, sure.
If I can cut between work for different people, then I think that gets the best out of me.
Yeah.
And I think it offers the best work for the people that I'm working for as well. That said, if someone offered me an amazing project, then I'm not going to cut my nose off to spite my face.
Yeah, sure, of course. What would you say has been the bravest or scariest thing you've ever done?
Yeah, this is a big question, isn't it? I don't think I'm particularly brave. I just walked past the fire station on recording this in Shoreditch, and there's a big sign saying "Love is the running toward," and I think that's true. I'm not going to be a firefighter. I'm not going to run into a burning building. At least I don't think I'm going to. I think the scariest thing was dealing with my own head over the last, I suppose, 20 years or so, probably from being a teenager through my 20s into my 30s. I never saw a doctor about this because I was always too scared to, but I'm fairly certain they'd have sort of diagnosed me with having anxiety or agoraphobia. Lots of situations terrified me. I was never housebound by it, but it became quite difficult to leave the house and do new things. And queues, terrifying. sitting in a theatre, terrifying. The idea of being trapped somewhere, terrifying. Social situations, terrifying. And that's quite limiting. Probably accidentally. I don't think we really had an understanding of what was going on, but Heather was a great encouragement with doing things and getting out of the house. Like, come on, you've got to do this. Yeah. And I now realise that we'd come up with this DIY exposure therapy approach,
yeah,
in a way. Yeah. I've now read more about it. Then there was a sort of a bit of a switch in my head, and I'm struggling to think when this would have been, maybe about the age of 30, I decided to, because I'd improved a bit, so I'd worked out what was happening in the sense of if I shied away from things, they became worse, and if I did things, it got better. And just started saying yes to stuff, but also not just saying yes to stuff, trying to make things happen. So if the idea of a social situation is scary, organise a 10-year reunion for university classmates. That is huge. There's the potential for rejection, people saying, no, I can't come, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or you make a tit of yourself in front of people who've done other things, or that I was really not okay with the idea of sort of comparison of people saying, oh, I've got this amazing job earning six figures in New York or whatever, what are you doing? That's my own stuff, that's not on them. So to willfully put myself in that position, that was quite a turning point. And actually, thinking about it, that's probably the scariest thing I've done, was that. I don't think any of the people missed out. I think they thought, oh, that's funny, I haven't heard from Jonathan in 7 years, and he invited us all to a pub in Leicester. What a novelty. I might not have even realised I'd kind of said it, because I kind of ask people to share that invitation more widely. But for me, that's what that was about, and that's what I got out of it.
When you were talking there, I was thinking about how I'm definitely an overthinker, and I am very much an empath, and how my behaviour and what I do might impact others, and I'm always thinking about other people. And it's something I've done my whole life. Overthinking can consume you, and it's something that I think during COVID as well, I actually really enjoyed being at home. And it got to the point where I actually stopped wanting to go to networking events, because I liked my own company, and I got so, it wasn't that I was agoraphobic or anything, but I got to the stage where I actually enjoyed being in small circles and groups of people rather than big groups of people and having very limited conversations and not being able to have those meaningful conversations that you can on a one-to-one. And I think I've definitely changed since the pandemic, where I actually really enjoy those one-on-one deeper conversations than I would going out to the pub and just having a brief chat, or a networking event where you have a brief chat and that's it. I like having eye-to-eye meaningful conversations about stuff that I'm interested in or they're interested in. I like that. Changing topic a little bit, what motivates you to get out of bed every morning?
In terms of just the actual physical act of doing it, I'm naturally quite an early riser, and I start the day with a run, and I love running. So I get up and I get out and I do that. I'm also quite fortunate in that the job I have is one that I enjoy doing, and I'm not trying to shy away from that or keep away from it. It's not like I'm sort of someone who's like, oh, I want to make £1 million by the time I'm 40 and I'm going to get up, and that's what's motivating me.
How often do you run a week?
It varies, but certainly in the build up to marathon, it's 6 days a week.
What sort of miles would you run?
In that build up to marathon, probably 60 miles a week for maybe like a sort of 2 or 3 month block. But at the moment, it's a bit more sort of downtime, and it's probably half that.
Yeah.
Because you've got to fluctuate, haven't you? You can't go hard all the time.
Yeah. I've run one marathon and that was it. I hung up my trainers after that point. I still enjoy running, but not to the point of running marathon. It's just, it's so intensive on your body. But then again, that's my mindset. Tell me that it's intensive on my body, isn't it?
And it is. And the more you do, the distance isn't a scary thing. The scary thing for me now is the idea of trying to do it quickly and holding a level of discomfort for an extended period of time. But I would just say, I love running. I think everyone should try it. I don't think everyone should necessarily stick with it if they don't enjoy it. It is one of those things. The more you do it, I suppose the more tuned in you get to it, and the more you start to enjoy it. And then eventually, before you know it, you can't not do it.
There was a couple of things it did teach me, though. Discipline, for sure, and also the focus. But also the fact that I've ran a marathon, and I've actually run 6 half marathons. I can do the half marathons, no issue, but it's the full one. It takes me a bit more out of my comfort zone. But I find that if you can run a marathon and have that in your toolbox, anything else, like a challenge, I think back and go, I've run a marathon, so this is easy. And in fact, even the podcast that we're recording today, this was a pipe dream of mine 4 or 5 years ago, and I never did anything about it back then. I just put it in the not now box. And then it wasn't until this year where I had various other changes in my life that went on that I thought, I'm going to bite the bullet and do this. And then that led to us working together. And then that led to the book, and some of the people on the podcast are going to be featured in the book. And it's all things happen at the right time. It seems to be timing's right.
Yeah, but you've also got to make that time, and you've got to provide that sort of fertile environment for those ideas to flourish. And I think you're very good at that. And I certainly came away from that chat in on the Isle of Wight thinking, when we first met, thinking, oh, crikey, like, this is slightly bonkers, this idea. And because it's not something that I'd have done before. But you've got to say yes to it. Yeah. If the excitement or the nerves are probably excitement. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. But if you think you might want to do it, but you're scared to do it, then that probably means you should do it. Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about the marathon kind of teaches you stuff. And I think marathons do that, but I think sort of any kind of challenge does that in varying degrees.
Yeah.
And I think there's something quite interesting. This is a bit of a diversion of doing a challenge in a different area to your main thing.
Yeah.
Can help you reframe the problems you face more generally. And I'm trying to think of an example, but I don't know, say you're stuck at work with thinking creatively. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, do a life drawing class or something and overcome a block in a different area, and then you might find something you can apply to your primary arena.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. I've just actually completed a comedy course, 6-week comedy course, and unfortunately I could only make 3 because I was on holiday. However, last weekend I stood up in Leicester Square and did my 6-minute debut comedy, which was, for me, I was pretty nervous beforehand because although I've been a teacher and doing that and performing on stage DJing, to actually get up and make people laugh is something, it's an art. And hats off to the comedians out there who do this full time, because that is, it's skill. It's an art to do that. But one of the things, as I was going through the process, I realised was that you've got to get yourself out your comfort zone to learn more about yourself. And in actual fact, week 5, I said to my partner, it was the Sunday morning, I said, Will, I just don't think this is for me. And he said, come on, get out of bed, get ready, go there, and just, if it's not for you by the end of the session, don't go back. And I did. I listened to his advice and I said, okay. And he said, you're not a quitter. And I hate that when people... and I was like, I'm definitely not a quitter. So I got out of bed and got dressed and went there, and I came home buzzing. I said to him, thank you. It was great. Yeah. It was great what you did, because it's almost like he shook me metaphorically and went, come on, you've got this. And I needed that. And I have to say, after I did my debut on stage, the following, like after it happened, I was on such a high, and just to feel them adrenaline surge of doing something that I was... But it was totally out of my comfort zone, but there's photographs of me doing it and I'm like, I've done it.
Yeah.
So then I go, okay, so what else could I do? And then, but I guess with the book, we're actually inspiring people in the book to go, you can do whatever you want to do and stop letting past things or past various things that have gone on in your life. You don't need to think about those moving forward because you're in the driving seat. And I'm looking forward to hearing what people think of our book when it comes out. And it's still a working title, so we still haven't come to that one yet, but we've definitely got the concept there, and watch this space for that one. A couple more questions for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a mentor or a coach in terms of your role, what you've been doing in the past?
Not in a sort of a conventional, formalised sense. I value the role. Running, I have a coach, Noel O'Dowd, absolute legend, who's one of those sort of volunteer coaches that make grassroots sport happen.
Amazing.
In so many places. He's just generous guy. He's ahead of me on the path in the sense of he's got his, I'm not sure how old Noel is, but maybe 3 decades more experience than me. And that's great. That's great. From a work point of view, I haven't had that, but there are definitely, there's courses I've been on, things I've learned. I'd say my boss at Wet Wheels, a disability boating charity that I've worked for, Jeff Holt.
Yep.
Jeff Holt has been an informal mentor. He's a quadriplegic yachtsman who's set all kinds of records and first to do various amazing things, sailing solo or unassisted. He uses a wheelchair. He's just one of those guys who has such a clarity of vision, a sense of direction, really, and just knows how to make things happen. And I'm not naturally the kind of guy who's going to walk into a room and go, this is our cause, give us money. That's why I do the sort of the behind the scenes fundraising stuff. But to see Jeff and that sort of dynamism that he has of walking into a room and almost saying, why don't you give us money? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Then that's great. But it's not just the kind of the ballsiness of Jeff. It's that sense of he knows he's onto a good thing. Like, not just a good thing, say as a money-making venture, but it can also apply to that. But the thing that is like good in terms of being a positive influence on the world, and he's not going to stop until he's made the biggest, most Amazing. Positive difference he can. And that's quite inspiring, but also just watching him in action, he's been a bit of an informal mentor in
Amazing.
A way. I wonder if he's going to listen to this. I've never actually told him that.
Yeah, I should get him on the podcast. Sounds very inspiring.
Yeah, no, you should. He's great.
Yeah, oh, fantastic. Can you share some tips with us about how you would deal with setbacks and not giving up and resilience, given that you've run several marathons, you've co-authored a book with me and sharing your tips in there as well. But can you share some top tips for people dealing with setbacks right now? Or
I suppose the biggie, and this applies to all sorts of areas, I'm not sure where I first heard this, but it's that saying of through, not out. Get through the problem, don't get out. It's so much easier when something is tough. And to use the marathon analogy, when it's tough, the easiest thing in the world to do is to stop running, move over the side and get the tube back to the mall and pick up your bag and limp home with your tail between your legs. The harder thing at the time is to get to the finish line. And that's staying within the barriers, keep moving forward one step after another, keep going no matter how hard it gets. Because when you get through it, when you get across the finish line, you'll have learned so much, you'll have achieved the thing, it's done. I think that's true of other situations. If you're in there's certain situations when you do want to get out if it's dangerous or harmful to you. But if it's just something that's hard, then just do it. And it's hard to do that. And I have so much sympathy and I empathise with anyone who's struggling. But I just urge you just to keep moving forwards one step at a time. Because it's to get through it is going to be so much more rewarding than to just get out.
Jonathan, thank you for that. Is there any other final tips that you want to share with listeners who might be going through a tough time right now, and or if there's any other thoughts you have around positive mindset or a growth mindset that you want to share with listeners?
I would say it's hard because everyone's in a different situation, but in a general sense, if something's not very good, you don't have to settle for that. You are allowed and you should have good things and a good life and a good relationship, a good job, good whatever it is that you want. And I think it's very easy to get into the trap of thinking, oh, life is tough, this is it. Yes, life is tough. There are random things that happen. There are hard things that happen. The world is not all rainbows and unicorns and glitter. It is a tough place. So to do what you can to get elements of positivity into it is absolutely vital. It's light and shade. It's the good and the bad. And if everything is just bad, then you've got to get some good in there. And there's no reason why you, dear listener, or anyone else, shouldn't have that. What is wrong with wanting an interesting, fulfilling, satisfying life for yourself? And that doesn't necessarily mean becoming a billionaire or driving a gold-plated Lamborghini or whatever. It can just be content or comfortable or having your basic needs met if they're not already. And I think for people that are in a really difficult situation, it is hard to feel like you deserve it or that you can achieve that. It's almost easier in a way, and this isn't to blame anyone, it's almost easier to think it's just always going to be like this, because to break out of a situation is hard, it is scary, but you've got to do it, haven't you?
So what would you say if someone wants to break out that situation? Is it about surrounding yourself with the right people, or what would be the, obviously, if they read the book, they might have inspiration there, but is there something like, is it the fact that they should find someone that can help them and surround them with that positive approach? Or is it that they should simply start listening to a podcast or a book?
Can I say all of the above? I think if you are struggling with something yourself, then surrounding yourself with people that have either achieved what you want to achieve or who just help you feel good about yourself, that is great. It might be that you don't have access to those people in real life.
Yeah.
So a book or a podcast, or I don't use social media and I'm not a massive fan of it, but I do appreciate that there are some inspirational social media things out there. So surrounding yourself with a community, it could be a chat group or something. It could be anything, but people who big you up at a time when you don't do it yourself. And you've also got to do the work on yourself, and that's hard, and it depends on your situation and it's different for everybody. But if you are stuck, and we use this phrase, being stuck in a sort of this state of viscosity, there are multiple factors there. Some of them will be you, like you yourself, your own demons, your own stuff that you're dealing with. And maybe to get out of that, you've got to go a little bit deeper at first. Got to acknowledge the dark stuff, and you've got to do the work on yourself. You've got to understand where the stories and the lies that you tell yourself, where have they come from? And surrounding yourself with other people in real life or through the internet or through your ears, if you're listening to this on the tube or something, that's all part of balancing that out. It's the positive influences that are going to help you when you're going into that sort of deep, dark place. But you've got to do it, because otherwise you're building something new on shaky foundations. You've got to get down to that bedrock.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. Really excited to see you again, and obviously our book launch very soon. Date to be confirmed. Thank you so much, Jonathan. Bye.